mes códa rein an ich an cocu cha me snúnichud nach do chóla mor an bhúine galig a bhín an ich op ríomach a sin a gair a geisio tú draf.
Well, thank you, Alan, for those extravagant words. And thank you, Paul, for inviting me to a most eccentrically late evening. Sit down if you would.
You want to sit down for
something? No, I'm going to sit my book. You want to?
I got to sit over there,
Jar?
Yeah. Okay. One jar, two jars. You got it.
Yes, for a very eccentrically late poetry reader, and I understand an extravagantly long poetry reader. And I'm grateful for the chance to try and read through several of my collections, because I think you don't hear your own voice till you start reading to others. And as Alan said, I recently started writing in English. I was a bit crunched up, I think, in Scotland by the debate about whether people should translate their own poetry. And in the same way, I don't really like hearing actors read my poems, because they seem to overemphasize things. Things that I meant slightly ironically, they seem to read fully tragically. So I think I prefer to read my own, to make my own translations too. So what I was going to do is to read through parts of four books. The first three are Gaelic, but the fourth one is in English. It's not yet published. I hope it might be published next year. So I'll start with a poem that one of my very earliest ones. I started writing poetry when I was doing my PhD, and it's a terrible time of lack of focus for many people, I think. I don't think I'm very different, but trouble seemed to linger longer because you didn't have to go out and speak to people. And this is a poem, I'll read this one in Gaelic first, but in general I think I'll read in English so that people who know Irish can hear how similar they are. This one I wrote about Edinburgh, where I'm from. Dúlia can do it in the earth, Fáilad Sheriff, the Cloy Natasha. So bore to Kyog, Isha, the Pala Cruisin, Quiet to Maka Brawn, Moor, Hul and Maha. Dúlia, the Schneer, the Lord, who was this Mark Smear. Mungor, she called her head and drew the chill, Cower, the Moose, the Vienna. Or she and called her traffic up, Nahani Flight, in Dúlia. Gareth, Tahik, the Bountigan, Fáilgach, Nyo Eshamlach, A kosha can kill a lesson life and an oily from Kate. Ach, clever and chocolate, Christy, colour and corn, green cana. Is here for horse and tehen, men of Wuyak and Fidia, can a cushier to share, echo behe, end of the mouth. This is a poem about a garden in Edinburgh. The new town in Edinburgh is a classical part, 18th century, very formal. And my poor father became manic depressive, which was in many ways a blessing. I think I've been addicted to the manic depressive personality ever since, for the glory it brings, although that's painful in the opposite. So this is about one of the gardens that's set in a cauldron of houses. Murray Pace Gardens, Edinburgh. Black leaves on the grass, an acrid smell of damp stonework, a wisp of oak of fog lowering itself around the leaf. Looking out through sorrow, my father's great eyes. A leaf spinning to the ground, the motion of my spirit. All round, a cauldron of imposing houses, sign of an ambitious age, orders of classical columns that do not countenance human frailty. Gardens haunted by widows, sailing, independent, walking in the wearisomeness of their days, their burdens concealed. But tinkling is heard here from the collars of the leap-stepping dogs, and against the houses, tiny bright leaves are seen, with a shapely birch tree gently letting them go. I started writing in Gaelic because I'd done my degree in Gaelic, and I think my ideas about poetry have been formed mostly through Gaelic. And in the sort of analytical way I was putting this reading together, I thought to myself that again and again the theme of nature comes, nature sort of letting us accommodate human disappointment, because nature is constantly in the cycle of letting go and starting up again. Well, the next thing I was going to do is this collection that Anne mentioned, that Porrico Snoddy in Dublin published, with Gaelic on one side and Irish on the other. And I thought I'd ask Alan to read three short love poems, and then I would read English translations of them.
So I'd read them in Irish, obviously, rather than like garbled Gaelic. Okay, first one is Cúnas go raibh níos teanú leis. Thaga sé chúm agus éar miste, cúnas go raibh níos teanú leis. Dhéanann céimhe agus déistín leis, cúnas go raibh níos teanú leis. Scuirfidh sé don ól agus rinne mé gardas leis, cúnas go raibh níos teanú leis. Inis ní thagann sé níos mó, is tair leis mé, cúnas go raibh níos teanú leis. Do you want to read straight after, or will I go ahead?
We'll
read together. Okay. Next one is on page 83, which means nothing to you, but it does to me. Well, the first one is Pina. On Buachel's a lot of rubbish. The yog von vui a tuntu at a flock as a titum, it all a weird, your ray marachui dead in yov, a roundabout the slipways, a water valley o yas, a schnauna wen, a lubra harmeos. A fós, leitú imbacalín a fhag na hín a réid, is dáb dóide hirín inte a lorgar mo vossa, dám fianna leis a chúram bí ar éadha dáb, mishe, bán gan ennin, fys tussa, gyola a dúaid. Iadrama. Bé dédrama a gyalme, iadrama de chaintis a ghaire, iadrama de lecking in lava, iadrama éirach úr vánla. As fi sé eadrama de foige, a stúgan na dhóla, is eadrama de laif im a chínse, a ligas le srofne.
Gwyrma hagen. These three translations were by Billy Jenkinson, under the name of Harry Gosport. Well, in English translation, the first one there was called, he used to come to me when he was drunk, because I was so fond of him. I'd make him tea and listen to him because I was so fond of him. He stopped drinking and I was pleased for him because I was so fond of him. Now he comes no more. Indeed, he despises me because I was so fond of him. And I think I should have said that I started writing poetry as a sort of catharsis for feeling very sad about some things. And then seeing things worked out like that, I became interested in the how they work formally, and it became not more interesting than doing crossword puzzles, and I've kept up ever since. And the second one there, a boy looking for work. A pale yellow leaf turning on its twig and falling, growing smaller, flatter, like your face today at roundabouts and slipways on the motorway south, sliding away from me down a labyrinth of difference. And yet, last night you lay in my arms all night long, and your neat young roundness left its imprint in my palms, hurting me with the tenderness Eve knew for Adam, me an anonymous woman, and you some laddie from the north. And the third one there, lightness. And lightness is the name of this first book that I wrote that was translated into English as well. It was this lovely colour, but with how sunny it is in Scotland. Why one's like that? And this one's called Lightness, and I'm going to call the whole collection Lightness because the feeling that when a poem works out, how it becomes light somehow. It was your lightness that drew me, the lightness of your talk and your laughter, the lightness of your cheek in my hand, your sweet gentle body's lightness. And it's the lightness of your kiss that is starving my mouth, and the lightness of your embrace that will let me go adrift. And when I started writing poems, I was very much under the influence of Thorny McLean, Matter Person from Skye. And one of the things that drew him to me, he was born in 1911, was that he would state the paradox and then wouldn't try to explain things more than they could be explained. And I had got into a paradox too of feeling inadequate for the strength of feeling that love inspired in me. So a lot of these poems, I think, are generated from that kind of tension. And here's a poem. He was writing to traditional meter, and I did sometimes too. And this one I'll read in English so that people who know Irish can hear how similar they are and how different too. Though everything has been swept away, love granted it its fullness, I do not regret the onrush of the tide or the pain and silence of its ebbing. For I sail the sea turned gold, the gleaming plain without limit, and when I tried to gauge its depth, I found no bottom to my dip. Running before the darling wind, my heart under a star-filled sky, in search of every delight in the world to pour out in my treasure's lap. Get a school for two of the a bullet and grand of honour, Hanok from Jinja Garage, no tea in the soft and fly. O Tao Misal in order, Nakwar, Lord, and your Kriyakna. It's the Vinny of Miohoas, who is my son of Skuniyakna. Me Ruiz Gunhui, Miana, Meher, it earwilt Rilotak. And Tord is Gaksolus and Tool, Gusakuma Gazok, Beto. Well, I'll leave that book now. But, no, I'm not sorry about that. I've been inspired since meeting Aoife here to read a few poems about having a new baby. And one of the things that surprised me about a baby is how, although they're very new, they have the knowledge of genetics. They have the knowledge bred into them of life from the very beginning. Wrestling. In the grey of the dawn, you drink intensely. Your eyes gaze ahead, their brownness tells you nothing. There is authority in the hold of your two hands on the breast. Your toes lead my belly to a rhythm of their own. In the evening, you grow fond. You press in the nipple and laugh as it rises, peeping round it at Dad with a biscuit in your fist. But at night, no taint pups you. No kiss on the lips can soothe you or ditty whispered in your ear. As fingers tearing at my gown, roaring at the darkness, you claim your hereditary right. Yeah. In Glasigan law, how go Gujian, the hulan a gawa cluas gun vien and rain you go, ha uterus the grey mehec the gal aig the heat, is torsak and a purug mavlian rikash mavlian. Fesca niw briato, niw jynia gyd yn chynna, niw gael eich i geini, niw cwch y bridas yn gwrsiore, British nad o'r oen. Ach y fleithio, ca cwyl yn metw, ca tal i'ch pog i ddybyn nhw, yw'n dwi'n ac y cagos yn ddybwys. Bia ni ddochorach yn mwhwn, ac y fi roi'ch atas gan dorac ysid, ac rydw i'n ddychod, fod dwi'n. This one is a rather sad one because my relationship with the baby's father didn't last. So certainly now with the glue of a baby between us, we are the best of friends. Invitation to life. This is no invitation to life, to be trapped between resentment and the grey rain outside. The tumult of the telly fills its silence in the flat. Nothing is sacred here. Anger has defiled all. In bed, we avoid each other, cold bumps and sharp knees, with the baby a barricade between us, his feet sleeping in my hand. I never wanted this for any of us, and it hurts to have nothing better for the child whose smile is my constant invitation to live. Well, it's mostly love poems that is in this. but there were a couple of poems when I was looking at what Celtic figures in the mythology of a nation, and I want to read a poem that I called Imamach, Remoteness, about what remoteness is. And I started to think of remoteness not so much as a function of space as a function of power, political power. And it's the same thing in Ireland. I see that a lot of the most expensive houses are in the most remote parts, and a lot of the most disempowered people are in the most central parts, in the city centre. So this poem is called Remoteness, and I'm looking to a degree at my own romanticism, my own desire for remoteness. Remoteness. The Highlands are not remote anymore. With a powerful car you can reach the place in a day. It's the bleakness of the coast that wore the people down and sent them overseas that draws us today, the miserable sights they left, desired as any in the land. Alas, remoteness, where are you? Where but at the bleak edge of the city, in the tower blocks between motorways, where people are removed, edged out from power. The same hurt squint in their eyes, as is seen in the emigrant sepia faces, that I had fully expected nature to have made beautiful. I think I could have written that as easily about Kerry or Connemara. In the 19th century we had a tax collector who collected a lot of charms and prayers from very much earlier than the 19th century. His name was Alistair MacGillivihil, Alistair Carmichael. And I was asked to write this poem when it was an anniversary of his death. And it made me again search my own romanticism. And I felt the same again this visit to Ireland, when I went in search of the real Ireland. And I think I'll read a poem. I was hoping my partner would come with me, and the only advantage that he hasn't is that I can read a slightly cruel poem about him when I did find the real Ireland in Strokestown. So just before I read Alexander Carmichael, I'll read a poem about a real Irish pub. I've very variable eyesight. This is one of the English, the poems I've written in English that I hope might be published next year. Am I reading loud enough? Are you hearing me?
Yeah, yeah.
A real Irish pub. We found a real Irish pub at last, and all I love in you is swept away with the Guinness. You blare at the singers like a foghorn, as if your praise alone of them matters. I shrunk into a corner, surprised by my indifference at not sharing this quarry, my self-sufficiency familiar, dependable. I look round at the placid, kindly faces, not one of them hurt or startled. I'm not the only woman here who shares her man with drink, has shrugged off a claim to exclusivity. I was not raised for this, yet it's how things are. It's a real Irish pub, as I said, and like it or not, we're at home here. But back to the serious business of Alexander Carmichael and going shopping in Safeway. Your books have filled me with envy as nothing else has, for in them I've glimpsed the charmed age, everything done prayerfully as part of a greater whole. I have envied Dini too, the farm tools about him as symbol of his people's effort, wood and iron, leather and hemp, worn away in the hope of return. I drive up from Safeway, the cars stuffed with plunder from all over. Despite the advert, nothing here of itself can cheer the heart, and enough is paid for in loneliness. I try to console myself that your times, Carmichael, were only as blessed as your imagination, that no labourer would agree with Healy it was a symbol as thin as his palm. But a prayer appears even in me, not for the letting down of milk, we have reservoirs of the stuff, not for the snoring of the telly, not for the wit of the satirist, but for the grace and the courage for me to accept these times. For no less hidden your people's purpose, midst churn and sweat, than mine in the midst of buying and selling. You showed us the prayer and the mundane, the tidy now in the pine of the wipers as I wait at the night, my life being worn away midst pain and joy, the lot that has always been human. Well, I'll leave that book now and move on to my third book, Cerebus. This one's still available. It's Fair Winds, it's in English. And I felt when this one came out in 2007, and I felt my themes had changed a bit. They'd become a bit more philosophical, and I was getting more interested in what the passage of time means. And I'll start with two poems I wrote when I was still in Aberdeen. I taught there for 7 years and I lived in a lovely, latterly I lived in a lovely house in the countryside. And by this time I'd left a painful relationship and I was in the bliss of living alone with my little boy. And I think this poem about the house I was living in is an objective correlative of the peace of living by yourself and living with the ghosts of the past, I think, of the farming community that had lived in this house. Well, I love this house. I love this house that I reach through a sea of ladies' lace, the car buffeted by wet yellow mops of broom. With the child asleep, I wander from room to room, bare feet and bare floorboards, seeking the ghosts who left this legacy of calm, whose breath appears in the long grass with blue and purple flowers. At night I lie awake under the thundering rain on the slates, under the thundering outrage of my happiness that no one sees. And in the morning, before the boy awakes, I listen to the scuttling of the swallows attending to their food below the eaves. Little white moths flutter on our legs in the dew. Till we come home, no one will hear the curlew above the fields, its call like wine gurgling from a bottle. No one will see the rabbits on the lawns of this house that stands at the edge of the track, its back to the earth as the postman turns, and it's front to the garden, looking onto the hill. I often think that about flowers that come up year after year, long since the people who planted them have died. Well, the next poem I was thinking about time, and this great poetic topic that science gives us in the 20th century, of everything being stardust, of everything being related, all life being related to life, and everything changes. And this poem came to me when I picked up a bird that was stunned on the conservatory window, and then it wasn't, and it's not often that I have a willow warbler in my hand, when I can examine it closely, it came to life again. A thud on the window and I read from the grass 2 inches of bird and another of tail, with primrose berry, needle beak, heart tearing against my own. I lay my lips on its head, satin and down, stuff that lay the young sun in the dust of the earth and the waters of the sea, will sail in on a black star's gasp in travail for a universe on the other side of time. But tonight, life presses on through your veins, and you rise from my palm in a flurry of green. I'll read this in Gaelic. Cianach Buia, Brach Rishan Unyik, is tuki mi as an ear, da oris ti ear, is oris illidri yeratol, snaas jago, brun dan a sorik, tria garias grif in bias na mau. Cari gimi ma filan is a cawn, stro ri coi, stu a ddai sy gain o, cyndus lyc na talabin yn wsiaf yn na maranan, a siolus is jacket os bydd reil gwy, an athych universe to howl jima. Ach an och ca beha brwyr na teithen, is eili tu bambog shan is chi hann eich gwanda. In the Isle of Skye, the geology is very impressive. I constantly, although I work in a college full of this sort of administrative twaddle that all universities are full of, the rocks give you a constant reminder of what endures. And in the north of Skye, there's a geological formation known as slippages, when they're still happening, when the rock is gradually slipping into the sea. And this is what this poem is about. Trottinish is the name of the place. Trottinish. Here you see the land lurching, its frills comb fragile. You see the slope of the hills slipping, step on step down to the shore, step on step below the surface of the sea. People come the world over to see the solid rock in flux, to see the earth as an escalator, Homo sapiens caught in a single frame, on steps that seem to stand still. And Shaw here and Talu are Tushlachas, here a heed, Uedrach and Kimmig, here Slish, Nabania, Shiamnachas, Tame is Hame, but the Seer and Achachach, Tame is Hame, Dolfo Uart and Amara. Hyd dwi'n iawn sy'n chwyl y cian, gwrs y charyg crwai eithin y rwyt, gwrs yn sŵn eithin mae'r steil y bio, homo sapiens yn ochr gyda nhw'n trem y fan, is colyfyd na cymyn, gyfynnydd yn stat. And I met my man who's so fond of blaring at singers like a foghorn, but there's many a good thing to be said of him too. And this is a poem about, I told you at the beginning that I was very much intimidated by the strength of feeling that love inspires, how to live up to this, how to sustain this ecstasy of love. And I think in maturity I learned that everybody has to do this. So I think the poem is about that sort of discovery, bond. The very wound I used to hide, I now hold in you. Not in order to heal it in either you or me, but in acceptance of it being a sign of our humanity, a wound not so shameful that we cannot name it as the hole in the side of man in which Thomas placed his hand, the emptiness that is our beginning and our end, where love stands fearless without cause to protect itself, the void in which we meet the compassion some call God. Nyoniach. Glach ti mi nish gam namagarstamil yn gerydd yon o'n itse, a galych mi o'n ymhyn. Gwndwlach yn gyddi galeus o'n itse, no o'n ymse, ac wedi gael ddys, mae'r swaith yn tyth ar dwyna. Ion na chi'n cael tam o'r tia, na chwrdd yn enw ychydig. Mae'n tal yn y slys mae'n dwyna. as in the Chutomis of Av, and Yoniach as Tuz as Eishvin, Parmster Fadilangu and Gudia. Nathilatin a year pain, nor scarlet in Bachab, and Yoniach as a Loraka, and Yach Shintan Kuch Gia. I think that's the first time I've said that out loud, and I think my stutteriness proves to me that it is the first time. Well, I came to Gaelic from Edinburgh, and I'm very conscious that if I was having to live off the potatoes I'd grow myself, I would see Sky rather differently. And this poem is called Elgol Two Views. Elgol's a famous beauty spot in the Sky where you see the Coolin behind you. And I was with a crofter, looking at a postcard from the 50s, I suppose, before there were any reed block bungalows and when old clubs were used. And we had a postcard and looked at it for a long time and I wondered what this meant. I'll say no more or I'll tell my joke. I'll go two views. I looked at the old postcard, the houses like a growth from the soil, the peaks towering above them, a sign of the majesty of God before an amenity was made of mountains, or a divide between work and play, between the sacred and the secular. And I passed the picture to the old man. Does it make you sad, Lassie? I asked as he scrutinized it in silence. Sad? Bah, not at all. I just couldn't place her for a moment. And he pointed to a cow in the foreground. That's Yellow Lady, Red Lady's second cow. I'd know any cow you see that belonged here in my lifetime. Yalbo dal Yalg. Choyet mi'n chan carsbwysh. Y tehen mar a sat yn tablu. Na hwn i cyn na'n batl yn o'n cywn na'n cor eid môr eich ei. Nes dyr ein eich gyddas jwgiantyn na sgarach eich yr oedd eich bosh. Eich rynw sy'n sŵwtha. Ys hyn mi cwn y bosi hi. Sy'n cwtio nhw'r sors o lach i gynnig mi, sy'n ahos fy sgrwtio. Hyn o'r sy'n chael ei richyd, sy'n cynnig yn gynnaio bach am o'r sy'n. Ac ys diwr ar y bob a pach o'r sy'n gelyd. Sy'n y ledi bwya, yn dal y lwg at y ledi di. Rhaen i gen y dag at bwy sy'n fi, a bwyd y gynnaio ar yn gio. And here, Alan is another one. In Irish, I forgot that Brody Gorman translated.
Yes, we're both in this book as well.
Between the same couple.
Sons. Chonig mae i'r tach i lleid yn mynd i gylior, bert hanoed a fi olwch ar i lleid o riaf, bert sgolog sein. Tris dweud banw chai lleid, siatn si dyn endi gan ffocl tyle, chael y chael ni hef pos y pos, y brannu amach ar y dalog, y chyniant yn y gwyffeithio, chyl y chyna, y tarant yn y nola, sin, agos cwron, tabac, siniain, agos cach na nuan, ys o'n tol sy'n cog o gyrach, Kind bakker a gomen oes bleeshin, gomnishach shirstach, er a dishkint, er a will afra do hoogus.
I understand Irish when I've written the original.
That's a good one.
Well, this one, Neil, my partner, told me in the morning, we had a pillow talk, that he really gave me the image of this poem about how happy people can be when they share the same dual of it, the Gaelic, probably the Irish, but it's dual of it. When nothing needs to be said, but they just have an awareness of sharing that duchas together. Happiness. Often have I seen them come together, two old friends, two crosses, who after a brief murmured greeting will stand wordlessly together, side by side, not facing each other, and look out on the land whose ways and memories unite them, breathe in the air and the scent of tobacco and damp and lambscouse, in the certain knowledge that talk would hamper that expansive communion, speaking on their golden awareness of all there is between them. Well, I'll just read one more from this book, and then I'll read some of the ones that I've written in Gaelic, in English all along. This one, that was going the recording. This one, sort of longing for religious unity while our anxiety is just before Christmas starts. Beat Manolica. Christmas dinner. Many a Christmas morning I stood at the window watching my mother feed the sheep. They running towards her in their need, a thundering wave over the frozen ground, to tear the cleft lips of the bundle of hay. And the golden wisps on the snow shone brighter than all our tinsel indoors. These mouths were easier to satisfy than the sealed mouths of the penny, that did not know that sort of hunger. A hunger for other Christmases and Christmases that have never been. A hunger for golden birds that will herd us into the same fold. Beat Manolica. Simic matin nolica hesin ekmunic. Mi coes ma bach ar y beatus na cura. Iet na'n rhys gallwn sy'n yn eicyn. Mae'r cawn y mynyr ar y fla rocha. Gwyth y calach a chach ar y mynyn sgolcha. Is what we am fearshin the lies and trach, now full of soft simple back in his day. Batter na billin at a half of it, na na billin dune shir and telly, it ach ro acris ten shorshin, ach acris is on nolican illa, agus nolican na for via ban, acris is on achlin orga, a buachin an ood croshin. Well, I'll read some from my latest collection that I would like to call Hypatus, which is a 13th century Scottish Latin word. It was the Scottish philosopher that gave the word dunce to the world, because he was so clever in Europe that people thought he was a dunce. He was from Duns in the Borders, and he produced this word Hypatus, which in English gives the word haxiety, which is the opposite of credulity. Are you any the wise of? He was saying that everything is important for its business, not for its hotness. That there may be two dandelions side by side, but each one is a moment of eternity. And I think that Plato has done us a terrible disservice in making us feel that there's a better world and a better version of everything in this world. And this book, Hypatus, I hope, constantly thinks the praises of things as they are. That eternity isn't a place we are yet to go to in the future when we're deep. It's a place that this is the moment of it now, and everything that is here is part of the stardust in the form of now. And so I think most of the poems, I don't know whether I'll be allowed to publish it with such an unpronounceable name, but that was what is the idea behind most of these poems. Well, I think that Japanese have been very good to realise the thisness of things. And the first poem I wrote in English was when I was in Hong Kong airport waiting for a plane to take me home, and my boy, who'd been very adventurous and eaten raw squid and said sung at karaoke, didn't want to go anywhere out of the airport. She wasn't wanting to be adventurous at all. So I wrote a series of little poems about the thisness of nature. And I'll just read a sample from that. from Japan in spring. On the temple precinct, deer nudge our pocket. Carp's lips kiss the surface of the lake. Disarmed by their coquetry, I run away laughing, unprepared for the Buddha's massive calm. Tanaka-san raids her garden, gives away armfuls of tretias and tulips, months of effort from plant and woman. Her blind husband does not see them. Better they bloom as a gift for others. Paper fortunes tied in a tree, a BMW at the base of the hill. A man in a suit runs up and back before we're done taking photos of blossom chill in the evening air. Can you put my specs on again? Sorry. It's not that we don't have blossom in the north. Delicate beams light up our woods. Double petals bloom above by our roads. But we don't gather beneath them on blue tarpaulins to eat our lunch, I think. Modern should have seen this strangely tinted snow, bunched on black twigs against the milky sky. Orange shrine gates blow through the drift. Striped awnings, lanterns hanging red, girls walking pigeon-toed in long black socks. He was so gentle he could draw out dark combs of whiting bees and find us the queen, gouge out his cell with his knife, and let us taste the sweetness from its point. And I'll just read one more. I see Fujiyama in Bangoran and Chihalma, a borrowed landscape over my horizon, plan to make a tea garden of a cross, to expose rock and keep calm, to ponder stillness and make an offering. I look after a friend's dog for a year, and sometimes with the daily walks, I found that nature could be quite overpowering, and this is about one of my walks with the dog. If you haven't got a dog, you can't know what it is to be regularly unsettled when you leave the office. For a world of crooked-fingered trees, of lichens and ferns upheld and decayed, each brittle branch in its green muff of moss, brown leaf mold crumbling beneath you, down into gullies, where only the liverwort, luminous and fleshy, holds on as you slither. You clamber over, double under, uprooted trunks, brambles snag your sleeves, your hair as you hurry past. You startle at the sockets in a gleaming skull, at a heron's harsh cry. Try not to let bog suck and swallow you, or root fell you in the failing light. Deer crash in the undergrowth. On their tails you glimpse a hound bounding white, with ears aglow. The chill air makes you dizzy, twigs spiral overhead. The sight of the car fills you with relief, and you drive back to concrete and glass, hoping colleagues won't see a difference. Well, this year I lost my sister, and I'll read a couple of poems about her and the chance that we have, I think, in poetry to let our feelings for somebody last a bit longer than they have, and our feelings last a bit longer than we will, but it's only for a while. She was extremely talkative, my sister. And this poem starts remembering her when she told me when she was very young. Voice. She phoned in the night, the voice that rang out down my childhood, appealing, lost. Now I had to be that cheerful voice, to reassure the voice hundreds of miles away it was not alone. I spoke into silence, then paused. Yes, she said. It was only her breathing. I pressed the button with a wretched click, lay down again, wrapped my arm around my own full body instead of her poor skin and bones. The night of her cremation, I held her voice to my ear in my sleep as we flew through the stars. She fell silent as we passed unfurling galaxies, gases billowing mauve and orange, while I, all the while, was struggling to wait to replace the non-existent phone on its non-existent hook by a B&B bed, thrifty, earthbound, for a space yet. I'm sure those images came from the Hubble telescope. We don't know where these images come in tonight. And here's another one I'm thinking of. Wild roses. When my sister was born, my father came to see her with a bunch of wild roses. Every birthday since, they've bloomed pink and white in thickets and hedgerows. This birthday too, their scent sharp with her endless absence. And I was saying how poetry lets us make something last a bit longer, but only up to a point. This is funny. I thought I could hammer a reliquary of words from the trembling dewdrop, the infant's first smile, from the moment as petals fall and hold them forever. For poems will moulder in forgotten roots, for petals will tremble and dewdrops split into the dying sunburst. And Big Bang's lasting seconds flew into eternity. So I think I should finish with a poem about Christmas and about enjoying our solidity while we have it. Christmas. I see them down the corridors of memory, the angels flying, my grandmother smiling as a child bandaging her unblemished hands, uncles and aunts making exits and entrances, my father warming the sphere ladle, splashing it dancing over the dust. My sister's head cocked, listening, rosy and bright to an old neighbour. Transparent, wavering, flame-like form. Some can't stand Christmas, say it's all nonsense. Forget how long we've spent, how briefly it's. So let us be drink. Let us...